And good afternoon. You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and streaming at WPKN.org. And the name of this show is In Context, a live call-in political talk show. My name is Ken McDermott-Rowe. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Hi, everybody.
And working behind, double duty behind the boards is our military affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott-Rowe.
Good afternoon, folks.
We also have a blog, and I want to mention our website, incontextreport.com, incontextreport.com. You can sign up for podcasts of our show there and see our latest blog entries. Often we have guests on our show, and we will next week. We're going to have, I should note, on December 19th, Monday at noon, Jeffrey Smith. And as you heard in the promo just before we came on the air, he's going to talk about genetically engineered foods. Are they safe for you? Do they pose dangers to the environment? And he'll be with us and be taking your calls.
So that he's a wealth of information, so I'm looking forward to that interview.
He's the author of what's regarded as the best critique of a genetically engineered food, Seeds of Deception.
Yeah, so that's very good.
Jeffrey Smith next Monday on In Context, December 19th. At noon. And today we're going to cover a lot of the important stories, analyze them, many stories that are not well covered or perhaps not covered at all in the corporate media. And we'd like to take your calls, really have an open mic today on any important issues that are important to you that you'd like to talk about on the air, give your views, ask questions. The mic is open to you, our listeners, and the telephone number to call in, I'll give it out right now, 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. And for listeners who rather email us than speak on the air, you can drop us an email during the show at ken@mdrtalk.org. ken@mdrtalk.org. And we know that we have many listeners who are listening to us at distant locations over the web. So they can drop us an email. We'll get it right away, and we can read your question or your comment during the show. So the number again to call in is 203-336-9756. One of the most important stories that occurred in the recent days has been the downing of an American drone in Iran, and the repercussions regarding our efforts to put surveillance planes over Iran, what's going to happen with the plane now that it's down. Evidently, the plane was not shot down by the Iranians, but was brought down through some kind of interference, some kind of takeover of this very advanced technological surveillance aircraft. Do you have any thoughts, Marchand, on how it was? What was it doing? Was it in Iranian airspace? Was it in? Do you think it was in Afghan airspace? Of course, our government's being pretty tight-lipped about it. And if it wasn't shot down, how was it brought down by the Iranians?
Well, I'm pretty sure that it was in Iranian airspace. I mean, it's almost an open secret that we have special forces operating behind the lines in Iran. We've been supporting the what we call resistance movements, which are legitimately terrorists because they bomb civilians, the Mujahideen al-Haq and Jundah Allah. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if we were flying this over Iran. Additionally, why on God's green earth would you fly a stealth drone over Afghanistan, a country where most of the people that we're fighting live in caves? Stealth would only be useful if we were going up against a country, flying it over a country which had radar.
And so how do you think it was brought down? What is the wasn't shot down? Because I've seen pictures of it. Some of the listeners may have seen pictures of it on the TV. It looks like it's quite intact.
Well, most likely what it looks like was, at least from what I've gathered, and the Iranians are being pretty tight-lipped about it, but it appears that it was an electronic interference. These drones, they're not actually piloted by somebody in Afghanistan or in Iran, or they're actually piloted by an individual in Las Vegas. At least that's where most of the drones are flown out of, by an Air Force pilot in Las Vegas. So you have this intense electronic signal going from Las Vegas up to a satellite and being bounced back down to Earth. What this means is that if you, in theory, had a strong enough electrical pulse or strong enough jamming frequencies, you could jam that signal.
So like a microwave gun.
Exactly. And then cause it to just glide down to Earth.
So the U.S. would lose control over it.
It would, from what I gather, just appear as if the drone went dead, as if it just almost turned off. You know, and it's it wouldn't work so well with a piloted aircraft, but it works really well with this. And it just so happens that this aircraft had the latest in U.S. stealth technology, so it was better than bringing down any other even piloted aircraft.
So how was it found, though? They had to have visual confirmation of it?
That would be my guess. Or it's also possible the Russians have developed a radar system that can detect much of our stealth aircraft, most notably the S-300 surface-to-air missile system can detect our stealth aircraft.
Well, then what's the point of all this stealth technology?
It really – it's there to, I guess, defeat our old adversaries. It was great when we were fighting Saddam, who had old Cold War-era technology.
Right.
But the problem is that as – our technological levels have sort of stagnated. We've sort of stayed at the Cold War level. All our enemies have begun advancing. They've begun moving up.
But it also seems that we're going after tougher targets as well, aren't we?
Well, that's true, too. We're not fighting. Both Gaddafi and Saddam had very antiquated technology.
Well, Gaddafi had good, like, tank buster weapons, but that it wasn't a ground war.
Exactly. Had we fought a ground war, it would have really been much more level playing field.
More messy, yeah. This whole situation just seems like we've built up a military that's based on going after thugs, you know, uneducated, unsophisticated, you know, just people who aren't able to put up a decent fight.
Basically, it's like Rowan Atkinson once very aptly said, you know, he said, I loved being in the British Army when the object of a British battle was that, or the prerequisite of a British battle was that the enemy must under no circumstances carry guns.
Yeah.
Even spears made us think twice. And so it's really what our military has been focused on since the end of the Cold War is pulverizing these enemies that are...
helpless buffoons.
Exactly, helpless buffoons. Yeah. And that's the way we paint them, too. That's the way we demonize them. Oh, yeah. Look at all those hapless Iraqis, all those hapless
cave dwellers.
Libyans.
Cave
dwellers.
Now, Iran
exactly.
has had two responses that I can see. One is they made a protest to the U.N. They called on the U.N. to condemn the United States for its violation of Iranian airspace. But perhaps more significantly, it looks like they're going to be sharing this technology with China and Russia.
Big surprise there. I mean, isn't that basically what we expect them to do?
Well, I think it's interesting that they're making it public that they're going to do.
Yeah,
that.
They're just saying, oh, by the way, we're going to share this with everybody.
And
to make us think twice, yeah, stop messing with them. I mean, look what happened when we had the stealth chopper that went in on the fake bin Laden raid that
right,
blew up.
Right.
You know, the first thing that happened was Pakistan said, you can't come in. They let China in. China came and thoroughly investigated the scene. Once they were satisfied, they left it alone and said, okay, you can come get it now.
And we're seeing a very interesting allude to Pakistan. You're seeing a very dynamic world situation. Pakistan is now realigning itself with China after being really in our pocket for many years since our supposed ally.
Well, and it's actually very interesting that you should mention the handover of the stealth helicopter because according to DEBCA, the Israeli intelligence agency, the Chinese and the Russians agreed with to view and examine the stealth drone that was shot down in Iran, and they've even sent over intelligence officials. Now the deal was that Russia and China would agree to give Iran more S-300 surface-to-air missiles as well as intercontinental ballistic missiles in exchange for being able to view this technology.
Well, this is an incredible blunder, this drone going down in Iran. I mean, first of all, it shows we're spying on them.
Yeah.
What do you need, a pen?
Yeah, yes.
It shows that we're violating their airspace. We're spying on them. We're using technology that we think is elite, and it turns out it's not
to be working.
And
so
it should be showing us that we're not equipped as much as well as we thought we were.
Now, we've been watching the situation here on In Context very carefully, and this whole buildup against Iran is looking like it's a buildup towards a war.
Oh, yeah.
And you can trace it back at least five years. Well, of course, you can go back all the way to 1954 when we overthrew their government and stuck the Shah in power. But it's been a pretty rocky road since the 80s when the Shah was thrown out. But if you go back just to 2006, George Bush signed a directive which provided hundreds of millions of dollars towards destabilization programs in Iran.
But it also shows our arrogance to say, oh, I can't believe you're not going to give us back our drone that we were using to spy on you with. It's worth millions of dollars.
Well, and that's part of our, you know, false sense of omnipotence, the very notion that we can fly into somebody's airspace, we can violate their airspace, and somehow it's almost our given right to be allowed to violate their airspace. It's a really bizarre notion that we have of the world.
And we are really marching towards a major war, and that's one of the things we were alerting our listeners to here as we follow these events closely, I think much more closely than the corporate media, is that we are marching towards a war with Russia, perhaps with China as well. Or either Syria, Iran at the moment seem to be the touch point of this confrontation, and it's going to be bad, and we want people to know that this is coming on and to do what they can. We think it should be avoided. It's not in our interest of our country to go into war, to expand the current war. So we want people to be alert to this.
So anyway, we are having the open phones today, but we wanted to get an update from a friend of ours, Cindy Pakulis of Long Island Skywatch, who has been spearheading an initiative on Long Island to try to get a public or an environmental study done before anybody is able to engage in genetic or geoengineering, also known as chemtrails. There's an issue that we've been covering for a long time here. And, Marge, can you bring her up?
Yep. Hello, Ms. Pakulis. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Cindy. It's Gus and Ken and Marge on.
So I got your email a few days ago about the event that you had, or the public hearing that you had. And I just wanted to get you on quickly to talk more about that, because I know you had some more hearings coming up, and I hear it went really well. Can you tell us about it?
It actually did. It was a public hearing, and there were 16 legislators present, and it was a unanimous decision to put it to assign it to the health. It was assigned to the health committee.
Where was the hearing, Cindy?
The hearing was in Riverhead, Suffolk County,
right. Okay,
New York. And it was moved out, which they all have to. I believe it has to be a unanimous decision. It was not tabled, which was really great.
Mm-hmm.
And it is now scheduled to be voted on by the health committee this Thursday at 2:00, December 15th. And we're asking anybody who can make it to come and show support to have them approve this. And if they approve it, then it goes back to the legislator. Back to the legislative body on next Tuesday, December 20th, for a full legislative vote.
And we're talking about the Suffolk County Legislature?
Suffolk County Legislature, yes.
And could you summarize the bill or the provisions?
I'm sorry?
Could you summarize what's in the bill?
Well, what it basically says is that in order for any type of entity, personal, private, government is also listed, to release from an aircraft aluminum, barium, sulfur, or salt, they have to fill out an environmental impact statement stating what the consequences will be to the environment and to the public health of citizens in Suffolk County.
So does that also include anybody who, now, as we know, when you release these chemicals into the atmosphere, they get blown for many, many miles. So does that mean that anyone spraying in Connecticut, Fairfield, Dutchess County, that they would also be affecting Long Island, presumably, they would also be included in this?
Well, see, that's where it gets kind of iffy, and that's where we really need public support to come in, because this is the first step. This is the first step where hopefully we can then,
right,
after it gets made law, we can actually tighten up quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, those are things that have to be, you know, kind of ironed out.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to get it on the books that they're actually taking us seriously.
Right.
And for someone to release that into the atmosphere,
okay,
they would have to file that. So all of that would be follow-up, and hopefully if it does become law, hopefully a lot of people will start testing their blood and testing trees and water, and then we can say to the health committee, now we really have to find out where this is coming from.
To your knowledge, are chemtrails being released over Suffolk County at the moment, or in the recent past?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah, are chemtrails being released over Suffolk County in the recent past? Have they been?
I think they're released over Suffolk County almost every day.
Mm-hmm. And do you think these are being done by perhaps by the military to test something, or are they being done by private firms that are trying to promote rain, or what do you think is the reason why these materials are being released?
Well, I think it's a multi-level program, and I'm of the belief that corporations and the military pretty much at this point are one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe a lot of it has to do with weather modification programs. I mean, they have They have companies now online, Just Clouds, and if you live in certain areas, you could just file an application with NOAA, and you could, you know, make it rain, make it snow. And also, you know, they're constantly, the Air Force is constantly dropping chaff and things like that, you mm-hmm. know, and it affects radar. It's a defense system. So, I mean, their reasons are, you know, so many to even begin to list. And then, of course, you can go down the path and, you know, start thinking of other reasons in terms of biologicals. I mean, the point is that no one should be dropping any of these chemicals above our heads without any sort of public approval, without the public even being aware of it.
Especially not knowing the consequences. I mean, we interviewed Michael Murphy here about a month and a half ago, and you know, one of the parts of his film, "What in the World Are They Spraying?" where he goes to the climate engineering conference in San Diego, and they very publicly said, "We haven't done any public health studies on aluminum yet. We have no idea what the effects are going to be. It could be in 10, 15 years we find out that it's incredibly dangerous, but we don't know because we're just going to have to keep trying to figure it out."
But you know, like Michael Murphy, Cindy and her group shows how grassroots action is taking this issue on, where the federal government has neglected it. Now, Michael Murphy was working on a local ordinance in Hawaii, and now we have this our local group in Suffolk County working on it.
Yeah, so it's the little guy standing up to the government who just purposefully turns a blind eye to anything, and they'll turn around, they'll regulate wetlands, you know, someone's you know, wet backyard and keep them from building a shed, and you know, sue them and force them to take it down. That's the kind of regulation the government actually spends its time doing, not keeping anyone safe. You know, this is a widespread public health phenomena, and it's an environmental danger. We have no idea what it's going to cause in the long term. And as Cindy said, they're probably doing it every day. We don't know. I mean, you can see outside today in Fairfield County, they're spraying all over the place, and they're not water vapor trails, folks, because that would dissipate in 30 seconds to 5 minutes, and this stuff is just lingering all day long, blocking out the sun. I want to know what they're doing it for.
Cindy, has Long Island Skywatch or any other organizations on the island been able to gather evidence as to pollutants that may have been
Oh, my goodness. We've taken – that was actually, I believe, what got our legislator to hear us, is the fact that we've taken samples from Iceland, you know, various areas, various ponds. We've taken rainwater samples. And one area that we took right outside West Islip High School showed something like 8,700 parts per billion, and at 750 – it's considered toxic. And I just took a sample from my tree.
This is for aluminum?
Backyard. I'm sorry?
This is for aluminum?
This is for aluminum and high barium and also strontium.
Mm.
And I took a sample from my tree in my backyard about 2 weeks ago, and it had high aluminum, barium, strontium. And if I could just, this is a program that, you know, I personally believe has been going on at least 20 years. And when they talk about, especially the geoengineering guys, when they talk about, you know, we really need to investigate aluminum, what is occurring now is actually the consequences that they're talking about. I mean, I think 1% of the population of children is autistic. They just came out with this alarming study where 10 years ago...
One in 54 children?
Exactly. 10 years ago, it was 1 in 10,000. Alzheimer's has moved up to the 50-year-old bracket.
Right.
I mean, asthma, respiratory illness, has moved up from the 7th leading cause of death to the 3rd.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, this isn't the first time that our government would have, you know, experimented on its population without saying, hey, guys, is it okay? So, you know, I mean, somebody has to start hearing us. And I did go to my congressman, and I did try to contact my senator. And you're not going to get anywhere with the higher levels because, you know, you're just not. You have to go local. And Wisconsin is doing it. And I know in Arizona now they're starting a class action lawsuit for people who are testing off the charts in barium. And I have to tell you, that's the next step on Long Island. So I'm asking everybody, please show up at the Health Committee meeting on Thursday because they have to know.
So that's this coming Thursday, the Health Committee of the Suffolk County Legislature, which will be meeting where, in Riverhead?
No, this will be in Hawpaw, and if you look on my website, Long Island Skywatch, all the directions and everything are there, and there's also links to the video of the public hearing.
Excellent. Your website again is?
Is longislandskywatch.com.
Very good.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us today. We definitely want to have you back on to update us in a couple of weeks. We have Jeffrey Smith next week and then the War Report after that. But the show after that, we'd like to have you come on and summarize. And if not, I could even get an email from you in a week or two just telling us what happened. And I can read that account on the air just to update everybody on what's going on.
Absolutely, guys, and love the show. You're doing a great job. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Cindy. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
So that's great. That's an example of community action, getting stuff done. And people think, wow, these issues are so big, I can't affect
that's
them.
Right.
Yes, you can. You can go down to your town hall and you can get propositions passed that affect federal, national issues. You know, like food safety or getting, you know, fluoride in your water. You can't even get rid of cavities by drinking it. It has to be applied topically. Why is it in the water? It's ridiculous. Did you know that 90-something percent of Prozac is fluoride?
Is that right?
Yeah, what's the effect of fluoride then? Why is it in the water?
Well, doesn't this raise the question, though, that why is it people have that mentality, though, that they feel like they can't affect it? I mean, because it's something like it seems like the powers that be thrive off of is the idea that I can't make a difference. Well, I can't change.
You know, one way you can make a difference is by participating in a conversation and changing the opinions of our leaders. And you can do that by calling into this show at 203-336-9756. It's in context with Ken and Gus and Marchand. That's 203-336-9756 on In Context this afternoon. We're taking calls on any subject. It could have to do with the chemtrails, as we just heard this report from Cindy of Long Island Skywatch, or any local or national concern that's really important to you that you would like to get your views out on the air, or you'd like to ask us questions about it. It could happen to do with the mysterious rise of Newt Gingrich or the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, or withdrawal from, or had could to do with the state of the economy, the unemployment situation.
King Hamad's visit to London.
There's a lot of stories going on, and so we'd be happy to take your call at 203-336-9756. And if you prefer to email us, we'll read your email, comment, or question on the air. Just drop us a line at ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org. And I think we do have an email.
Yeah, we do. And this one is from BJ in Fairfield County. And she says that now that the U.S. debt has passed 100% of U.S. GDP, the U.S. debt is in crisis on par with Italy and Spain. So why is the focus on the euro and not the U.S. dollar?
Right. That is, we've been getting a free yeah. ride for a while. All of our media keeps bashing the euro, and indeed their countries are in terrible shape. But I think it was Alan Simpson said, we're just the healthiest horse in the glue factory.
Oh, man.
He's the senator from Wyoming. He's always been a real hawk about the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And right now the attention is focused on the euro. You know, will it survive? And they had this very important meeting last week where they made, under German pressure, made a first step towards a greater fiscal integration. But the Brits walked. 26 out of 27 countries in the EU decided to go along with some steps towards integration. But the Brits walked on it. Is it a mistake for Great Britain? I don't know. They're married to the United States in terms of their foreign policy. They've never joined the Eurozone, although they're part of the EU. Mm-hmm. And now they say they don't want part of the centralization.
But, you know, the whole thing, all this austerity and all this cost cutting, all this sort of stuff that goes on in the EU is just taking the skin off the poor people, the working class, and using that money to pay back bankers who have no claim to this debt.
It's really the same thing that happened here.
It's insiders in the government who used to be big bankers.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, like, most of them are Goldman Sachs minions. You know, Papandreou and Monti. You know,
in Italy,
three-card Monti, and the now current and past. We'll see. Is Papandreou the current prime minister of Greece, or is he the past one?
I'm not sure.
I think he's current.
I think he's the current guy.
He's current. And the one who was passed, it was also Goldman Sachs. So it's Goldman Sachs passing the baton to another Goldman Sachs insider, all working in conjunction to push money from the bottom rung of society to the top rung. So it's just a transfer of wealth.
It's the same thing that's happening here.
Stealing public
property. With a multi-trillion-dollar bailout, they had the party, they had the derivatives, made a fortune, and then when the party ended, they gave us the bill.
We need more of your
trillions
money.
Of dollars. So the Europeans are facing the same problem that we're facing.
But the euro and the dollar are intimately tied.
They're tied, and it's really going to be a
trillions of dollars of currency swaps.
You might think, well, the euro doesn't have to do with us. We don't use the euro. But the European economy is so important to the world. If the European Union were to collapse, if the euro were to collapse as a currency, it would have devastating effects for world commerce and, of course, affect the U.S.
And the United States would have to turn inward and start its own consumption. You know, we would have to become semi-isolationist at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So it would be very bad for world trade. Now, the Chinese have said that they intend to back. They've said a number of times this year that they intend to back the euro. And another thing that's playing out, I think, in the euro crisis could be a realignment of Europe, possibly towards a less slavishly American foreign policy, especially as Britain, our staunch ally, withdraws, pulls back from the EU, and it becomes dominated by Germany. We might eventually, I think, see a more independent foreign policy.
I just wanted to, before we get too far afield and run out of time, I just wanted to go back to the Predator story, the Predator drone story, where we were talking about, you know, crashing in Iran. The Predator drone has actually been pretty big in the news lately because it was recently used in the state of North Dakota for domestic spying. And something that we've talked about a bunch of times, like we had the show Mark Dice come
recently,
on,
yeah.
And we talked about his book, Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True, where he talked about the new age of technology and surveillance and how the government always calls for technology and says that we need it for a looming threat. But then they end up always turning it inward on us. You know, like all kinds of financial regulations that the government comes up with are always to protect Americans from some outside intruder. You know, like, for example, one big one that I always like to call on was George Bush, as one of his final acts of office, was to create a lead paint test that was going to be put on the backs of the toy producers. So they had to do a lead paint study, prove to the government that it was safe, then they could sell their toys in the market. Now, the obvious problem there is that most American toy, like small wooden toy companies who, you know, they're just a small few $100,000 production, they would have to spend enormous amounts of money doing these lead paint studies to show that their toys are safe. But yet, like Hasbro, who makes all their toys in China, it would cost them literally, you know, a fraction of the cost. It's much less for them because they're such a large corporation. So they get to do the lead paint study, send all their crap over here. But the American toy companies who are doing things at much higher cost and overhead have to be hurt more. So it ends up that it's something that was intended for good, but it ends up hurting us domestically. So we have these Predator drones that were actually used in North Dakota to spy on a family called the Brossarts. And they had a farm, and they were accused of having six heads of cattle from a neighboring farm wander onto their farmland. And so the county sheriff, Kelly Janke, goes there with a search warrant. And he's met with the family with guns on their property border, and they chase the sheriff off, right? And so these guys, at the bottom of the article, this is from the LA Times. It says that these guys are known as what's called they're part of the sovereign citizen movement. Have you heard of that?
No.
That's basically really old school American constitutionalists, where they say that, you know, we're not subject to the income tax. We don't have to pay taxes. We are sovereign citizens.
Yes.
They're basically declaring themselves exempt from most county and federal state laws. And so the newspaper says that the FBI considers them extremist and violent. So this is why they considered these people to be such a threat. So they use Predator drones with infrared cameras to fly overhead for hours and hours overnight and during the next day to see where they were on the farm and at what time. And then as soon as three of them were driving ATVs across the property, the camera said that they didn't have guns. The SWAT team rolled in and arrested them all. So it shows the Predator drones are not for the borders. They're for us, and they're going to be increasingly used as surveillance methods.
So bringing it home. The technology,
they're bringing it home.
The war technology can be used against us, yes.
Exactly.
It sounds eerily familiar. The Germans did something very similar, if I recall.
And this is the first known arrest of U.S. citizens with a Predator drone. And, you know, I think we can look forward to more of this. And, you know, criminals are always attracted to positions of power. So if you're one of those people out there who says that, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to fear, well, you better be careful, because, you know, I don't think that the people who have been molested or assaulted or raped by TSA officers had anything to hide. But they were just victims of crime, because criminals are attracted to positions of power. Where do all the child molesters go? They go into coaching. They go into government. They go into law enforcement. They go into places where they're not going to be watched.
Well, and just from a rational perspective, I mean, if you work for the TSA, why on God's green earth do you need to feel up a you know, 3-year-old child.
Yeah, really. Who's attracted to that job?
Exactly. It's not rational. A 3-year-old child is not going to be a suicide bomber. I'm sorry.
Well, that brings me to that report that recently that 3 elderly women say that the TSA made them pull down their pants. I mean,
oh,
is this necessary for our safety? Oh, is it unbelievable? Two of the women were in their 80s. And they put, according to the article, this is on InfoWars, they put the TSA on the defensive by going public with their embarrassment. And one claims she was forced to lower her pants and underwear in front of an agent so that her back brace could be inspected.
Yeah.
Another said agents made her pull down her waistband to show her colostomy bag. So I just don't see why this is necessary for our security.
It's fear. It's the total control mentality. It's the idea that it's like basic training in the Army. You know, the idea that we can mess with you anytime we want.
We have a phone
call?
No.
Can you give the number?
Oh, let me go. Sure. Our phone number is 203-336-9756. The name of the show is In Context, and we are broadcasting to you at WPKN 89.5 FM. In Bridgeport, Connecticut, and streaming at WPKN.org. And In Context, it's a live political call-in show on from noon to 1 on Mondays, except for the first Monday of the month when we have our general manager's report. And we're taking calls on any subject. We've been talking about the drone, shooting down of the drone. We've been talking about the Euro crisis. We're talking now about how the technology of surveillance is being used to get domestically against American citizens.
Or do you have comments on MF Global and John Corzine, you know, getting away completely scot-free?
Yeah, that's right.
And we have a call. It's a Mike from Beacon Falls.
Oh, Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
So my question in regard to the Predator drones and the whole unmanned aerial vehicles, could you verify whether or not we have our military has the capacity to fly, like, super tankers or, you know, larger vehicles by remote or perhaps even on some sort of autopilot mechanism? Because – you know, with the solar radiation management, the aerosol springs that, you know, go on and have, you know, gone on for breath of a decade or more, I wonder if it would, you know, be in the best interest to keep as many people out of the loop as possible and try to keep this as remote as possible.
That's a very good point, and it's true, because all commercial airlines, I think, outfitted since, I think, 1996, have had remote control boxes in the cockpit. If anything were to happen to the pilots, they could be remotely controlled.
And I believe they can be controlled by the big Air Force surveillance plane, the one with the big radar dish on the top, which I can't remember.
Okay, so they can actually
the AWACS.
The AWACS. Thank you very much. The AWACS, they can actually break into.
They can break in.
They can break into the aircraft's control systems and be able to fly them remotely.
In fact, Mike, the pilots for 9/11 Truth, I don't know if you're familiar with that organization, they took the position that it was most likely that the planes that hit the World Trade Center towers were remotely controlled.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. Well, I do appreciate it because, you know, I see this, and often the planes will fly in tandem and really in such close proximity to each other that you think, you know, well, for one, I mean, I think it was in 98 that they changed the TSA changed the standards on visibility where it was moved. It was a point Clifford Carnicom pointed out that they lowered it to maybe 5 miles. That pilots needed to see.
Okay.
And prior, it was something like 20 miles.
Okay.
So, you know, not only has visibility become much more difficult, but you'd think that there's perhaps safety issues at hand here.
Okay.
And if you had remote control planes or, you know, something of that sort, it might be easier for them to fly in these grid patterns and fly very close.
And they do fly in some very tightly coordinated grid patterns, you know, where they crisscross and one will pass through and then followed by 30 seconds later, another one will cross the same line that first plane has created. You know, if you're out there watch on a clear day, you'll see one fly across the middle and then three planes fly, you know, perpendicularly crossing that same line so that it creates this giant overcast cloud that just sort of hovers there.
I think a lot of that may have to do also with the very heavy reliance on computer systems that pilots have. I mean, fundamentally, when we think of a pilot, we think of, you know, the old World War II guy behind the joystick.
Top Gun.
Top Gun. Yeah, but in reality now it's so heavily computerized. I mean, you know,
visibility isn't as important.
Visibility isn't as important. I mean, really, you're running off of all these gadgets and gizmos that might allow you to fly in the pattern with very little manipulation.
And
that's also
why we hear about close calls where planes have crossed under or over another plane within a few hundred yards. We hear that pretty frequently.
Mike, what do you think are the implications of this technology?
What
are your concerns?
It's frightening, really. I mean, for one, our standards on just being watched pretty much and monitored either through internet or, you know, use of phones is something that most people, well, perhaps your listenership is aware of, but for the most part, we're not really aware of. It's just part of the new age, I suppose, though. Nothing we can really do about it, but I guess try to fight back in some way, demand that we have some, or protect our civil liberties, you know, in a myriad of ways.
It does seem to pose a challenge. It's a real challenge to our privacy and our civil liberties, and it's almost the genie is out of the bottle. How do you keep it under control?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, we thank you very much for the call.
Thank you very much
for your call.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Want to give the number again?
Our number is 203-336-9756. The name of the show is In Context, a live political call-in show, and we're taking calls on any subject that concerns you. We've been talking about a range of foreign policy issues today. The number again is 203-336-9756. Or you could email us if you'd rather not speak live on the air to ken@mdrtalk.org. ken@mdrtalk.org.
We do have an email from it's from Anonymous. Come on, guys. Give us your name. Tell us where you're from.
They're afraid the government will find them. It's not too far off.
This person says, if Ron Paul wins or comes in second in Iowa, will that change the stance the other candidates are taking on foreign policy, including the war? That's really interesting because one of the articles that I saw just about over the weekend, maybe Saturday, in response to the last debate, was that it said that even though Ron Paul's popularity is really exploding, especially in Iowa, there's people everywhere who are really strongly behind him, and that he has the strongest support base. His biggest problem with the moderates, and especially in the left and the core Republicans who just won't go toward that libertarian slant, is his foreign policy. So they outrightly say his weakness is foreign policy, which I disagree. I think that's his biggest strength.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because there is a new poll out in Iowa. It shows Ron Paul running second, even though he's hardly ever mentioned in the news articles.
Right.
But interesting, it shows that amongst Democrats and independents, he's way ahead. He's number one. It said he's 28% to 18% for Gingrich and 13% for Romney amongst those groups.
And
I think there are a lot of Democrats in Iowa who realize he's the only game in town if you're against the war.
And what's funny is that his policy of non-intervention runs completely contrary to what the establishment has been drilling into our heads for the past 30, 40, 50, 60 years, where no one else, where we have to go around and inject our personality into all these developing nations, because if we don't, then they're going to turn communist, or now they're going to turn terrorist, or they're going to be a rogue state, they're going to be a narco state. And what happens? That happens anyway, because that's obviously what we're doing. We're going around creating terrorists. We're creating narco states.
The idea, it seems, though, is that we want the terrorists or the narco states that back our foreign policy, because it's a great hypocrisy. We talk all the time about democracy and spreading freedom and liberty, but what have we given our so-called allies? I mean, the people of Bahrain, we've given them a tyrant who actually, in a recent tear gassing incident, his police murdered a little child. We backed Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. We actually supported al-Assad's family at one stage, the ones who were perpetrating crimes.
Get back to the caller's question. Even though Ron Paul is running well in the polls, he's had no effect yet, really, on the debate. It seems to me that the other Republican candidates are falling all over each other to show that they're going to have even a more aggressive war policy.
In certain things, there are certain stuff where they've piggybacked on, like auditing the Fed. you know, Gingrich and Santorum and Bachman, they're and Perry especially, they're like tripping over each other to try to
criticize
pick up,
the Fed.
Yeah, to try to pick up his supporters, because anybody who may be on the fence who says, I sure love war, but man, I hate the Fed, those they're gonna go and they're gonna try to pick that up. They're gonna try to fight for those
well, now,
stragglers.
If Ron Paul were to get the nomination, and still with the it probably is a fairly long shot at this point, at least it would put the war issue at center stage in the general election.
Right.
And people would have a chance to have a fundamental discussion about our foreign policy and whether we should be in wars all over the world, whether we should have a $1 trillion defense budget.
Sure, yeah, exactly. And Ron Paul states it very clearly. You know, he says we can't afford it, hands down. That's the end of the conversation. So even if you want to talk about how you want to be a do-gooder,
right,
and run around and tell people how to dress, and what to eat and how they should do things. Tough. We can't afford it.
Even
so,
if you subscribe to the view that American foreign policy is fundamentally an exercise in humanitarianism.
Yeah, right.
Even if you subscribe to that, which I think is
right,
quite
Libya a myth. Was a humanitarian intervention.
Yeah,
right.
But we're blowing the legs off a little children.
Simply, and now they have no water.
Simply, charity begins at home. We can't afford this humanitarianism anymore.
Exactly.
So let's rebuild America.
And besides, if you put the CIA in charge, you end up with Noriega. You know, that was their guy. They put him in, and then all of a sudden we have to go down and fight a drug war.
Look at Saddam.
It creates more problems than you
think. The CIA backs Saddam.
What do you think about this race? If you call in and let us know at 203-336-9756, what do you think about the incredible rise of Newt Gingrich, the incredible disappearance of Herman Cain, the sort of here again, not non again appearance of Rick Perry, and the seeming inevitability of Mitt Romney, even though no one seems to particularly like him, and about Ron Paul, the 13th floor in American politics that nobody talks about. If you'd like to express your views on any of these issues or any other concerns you may have, give us a ring at 203-336-9756. We'll be with you for about another 10 or 12 minutes.
I did catch the debate, and what was funny was there was one part where they said, we want you guys to say something nice about each other. And three of them they said something about Ron Paul. And it was sort of ironic that they never mentioned him, but yet three of them mentioned him as the wisest and most influential. Romney said, one thing I think is great is that he invokes leadership, because I come to these events and no matter what the temperature is, it's freezing outside. The only people I see out there are Ron Paul supporters waving signs, because he has the most dedicated base.
And he's actually raised a lot of money, although
people
he doesn't get
are really emotionally invested in his message. They talk about infidelity. Nick Gingrich, obviously, that's a backhanded question to Gingrich. He's cheated on his wife dying of cancer for one of his staffers.
So how can Gingrich withstand the scrutiny once people really focus on the fact
that
he took $1.8 million in fees from Freddie Mac, which went bankrupt.
And he was for the bailouts.
How is he going to stand up to scrutiny once he gets to a general
election? He was for the bailouts. He's been for cap and trade for 20 years, and he says he was never for it. And over the past, 2 years or something, he's gone against it. And he's, I was never for cap and trade. What are you talking about? He wrote policy papers saying that we have to fix the environment and how we need cap and trade. And he did a commercial with Nancy Pelosi where they sat on the couch and said, we don't agree on much, do we, Newt? No, we don't. But we do agree we have to take action to fix the climate, and that was for Al Gore's group, and he, along with his partner, and the name of the company is Blood and Gore. You can't even make up a better name than that. And that is one of the only carbon trading companies in the entire world. So all the profit goes to Al Gore.
Did you have something you want to chip in with, Marge?
Well, no, I just think the fact is that Ron Paul is the only candidate out there that is in any shape or form independent. I mean, all of the others are just shadows of each other, Kang and Kodos. But the media has already decided. That's why, folks, you have to go out. You have to look up these candidates' background, because the media will dictate to you, the mass media will dictate to you who the candidate is.
And that's right. And here's a good example. A recent headline in the New York Times. Democrats see a two-horse GOP race.
Two
words.
Romney
was,
and
yeah. This
Gingrich.
This week it's Romney and Gingrich. 2 weeks ago probably was Romney and Kane. A month ago was probably
Romney and Perry.
And so they're telling you there are only two candidates. And you know they do this every 4 years, and it's really because of this media corporate complex that essentially wants to and is usually successful in picking the candidates of both parties.
And ABC said that it's inevitable that Gingrich will be the nominee.
There you go. So we're told up front, and if you repeat that often enough, he's going to do well in the polls.
Yeah.
He's going to have the name recognized.
Because you're going to sway those middle-of-the-road people who are not committed.
They pay only a little bit of attention to the news anyway.
Because the polls are the question in the poll is always, if the election were held today, who would you vote for? And they're like, well, today I like Gingrich.
Yeah, and that's because you keep hearing him every hour on the hour. And it's not just the Republican phenomenon. It happens in both parties, whether it's like the Clinton-Obama race. And how could, for example, Dennis Kucinich get any press? Forget about it. Or if you go back to 92 when Jerry Brown ran against Clinton, and had tremendous resonance on issues like NAFTA. He was against the Persian Gulf War, and he was getting a lot of votes. But then the media just slammed him, and he disappeared.
NAFTA, Gingrich, one of his pet projects, where it publicly said he was against it, but behind the scenes helped it pass.
It was overwhelmingly opposed by the American people, and yet it passed. Why? Because the Democratic candidate, and that was Clinton, and the Republican candidate Bush, they were both in favor of it. And here's a Democrat coming in, supposed to be pro-labor, pro-worker, and he moves heaven and earth to get NAFTA through Congress.
We do have an email from Abby in New Mexico, and she has one short question and one way too long question. I'll read the short question first. And she says, Islamabad has demanded that the U.S. leave the strategic Shamsi Air Base in protest against the November 26th NATO airstrike on a Pakistani checkpoint in which 24 soldiers were killed. What's next for U.S.-Pakistan relations?
Well, in a striking out-of-character moment for the United States – whoops, I just hit the microphone.
I'm sure that didn't go out of the
air. Yeah, exactly. You know, bing! But what's incredible is the U.S. has actually evacuated the base. And I think it's because right now we're looking at picking a fight with Iran and Syria, and we really don't want to be tangling with a Chinese-backed Pakistan as well. So we've actually evacuated the Shamsi Air Base, and the Pakistanis have moved surface-to-air missile systems to their border. And they said if we try to launch any more drone strikes within Pakistan, they'll shoot down the drones.
And just to back up, Pakistan was our big ally all throughout the war against in the 1980s against the Russians. And up until very recently, they were regarded as our key ally in a war in Afghanistan. And things have fallen apart with them.
Well, and in fact, I mean, not only have the Chinese and the Pakistanis been holding joint training operations together, Pakistani commandos and Chinese commandos, around 300 each, with attack helicopters. Additionally, the Pakistanis have entered peace negotiations, albeit they've denied it now. They've entered peace negotiations with the Pakistani Taliban. Supposedly the people that we're supposed to be fighting, they've entered peace negotiations with. So I think they've realized that we can't keep their regime in power for much longer. So they know which side their bread is buttered on.
In fact, we may just be just as happy if Pakistan fragments. There have been some talk that...
But that's the problem. It's not fragmenting. The Chinese are bringing in unity, they unite with the Pakistani Taliban.
That's right. The Chinese are helping them maintain their sovereignty, and the United States they now see is undermining it.
Well, exactly. So that's why... Now, the big question will be, the Obama administration said it's going to continue drone strikes. The big question now, the Pakistanis have shut down our supply line into Afghanistan. They won't reopen it. This is the longest it's been shut down. The big question is, will it continue to be shut down? Will the Pakistanis, in fact, shoot down our drones? I'm inclined to think they might not necessarily shoot down the drones, but they're going to keep the supply routes closed. Additionally, the Russians, President Medvedev, our only supply route, land route into Afghanistan, travels through Russia and northern Turkmenistan, I believe. It might be Tajikistan, one of the many stands north of Afghanistan. And they said that the Russians threatened to shut it down. Now, most of our essential supplies, fuel, food, things that aren't explosive, all travel on those roads. So the Pakistanis keep it shut down, and the Russians decide to put the strangle on the U.S. forces. They shut down that supply route. I mean, it's going to be one giant Stalingrad.
If you'd like to join our conversation, it's In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, streaming WPKN.org. Our phone number here at In Context is 203-336-9756. We have only about 5 minutes left in the show, so if you'd like to get your call in, you better make it now 203-336-9756.
Why don't we spend a few minutes on MF Global and John Corzine before we get out of
sure.
here? The other day, Corzine was summoned to give testimony in front of Congress about the collapse of MF Global and all the financial difficulties there. And just to catch people up if they don't know what's been going on, was that they made bad bets on euro bonds. And they had been raking in the cash up until the point of the collapse. And then all of a sudden, they have to cover these bad bets. So what they did was they pulled in their clients' investment accounts, and they used that money to mix it with the firm's money to pay for these bad bets.
A basic no-no.
Yeah, and the losses started out at $600 million, then it was $1.2 billion, then it was $2 billion, now maybe $2.5 billion. It's between $2 and $3 billion. And John Corzine, in a very tearful confession, he says, "I have no idea where the money went. I'm really sorry." Now, he backs it up by saying, "I lost $12 million personally." But I say, "You don't know where the money went. How do we know you lost anything?"
And these are the smart guys who are running our country, basically.
He's ex-Goldman Sachs, ex-governor, ex-senator. He's as insider as inside gets. He's cozy with the regulators. They turned a blind eye, probably because he knows them.
Which goes to show that the country should be run by people like you and me and our listeners.
It shows regulation doesn't work.
And not by these guys.
And speaking of listeners, sorry, I keep forgetting to turn up my mic. And speaking of listeners, we have Peter from Riverhead, New York. Go ahead, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Peter.
Hi, how you doing today?
Great.
Go ahead.
Okay, I know we have just a few minutes.
Yes.
But, I'm not a politician, and I'm really not versed in how the intricacies of the government works. But
okay.
It seems to me that if we do away with lobbying, that would level the playing field everywhere, and that would change the game overnight and really put our politicians in a position where they would have to listen to those who elected them, which are us.
Well, yeah, you're talking about a widespread phenomena where we need campaign finance reform, we need term limits, and we have to drastically limit or completely eliminate lobbyists, because they have brought the money to Washington and they have unlimited ability to influence policy. They often will write the legislation and provide it with opinions to the congressmen because they don't have the time to read it. And they're cozy with friends at lobbying groups. So they say, "I trust my buddy Joe at such and such firm on K Street." Well, Newt Gingrich is a former lobbyist. Actually, I guess currently still has an office on K Street. And
we're cut out of the conversation.
We're completely cut out.
You know, and you feel like we're just window dressing. They come to us every 4 years and they kind of want ratification.
Yeah. They hold these town hall meetings, but they don't care.
The lobbyists have already decided.
Yeah, sure.
And I think it's an excellent point, Peter.
Yeah. You said it very, very well. It's window dressing. This is the truth and this is the fact. The politicians in Washington are bought by big business and lobbyists. And they are voted into office by us, the population, and then when they get into office, they turn their backs to us and they kowtow to those who got them there. This is the truth. If we eliminate the lobbying, then they have to do what they're voted into office to do, and that's really listen to us. We should also make them personally and financially accountable for everything they spend as well.
Thank you very much. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, Peter, but thanks so much for your call.
Good call.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too.
You too.
Well, you've been listening to In Context on WPKN, 89.5 FM, Bridgeport, Connecticut. My name is Ken. I'm here with Gus and Marchand. We'll be on next week, December 19th, Monday at noon, with Jeffrey Smith to discuss genetically engineered foods. And he'll be with us on phone. He'll be able to take your calls.
Yeah, read ahead, folks. Look him up online.
And we're at incontextreport.com is our website.
And find us on Facebook.
Take it easy, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.